Oh, yeah. Listening to the Winners and Losers radio program. We're broadcasting here on enlightenedradio.org. And it is November the 14th, 2017. My good friend and longtime co-host here, Gail Becker, is on. In about 10 minutes, we're expecting a call from... I'm going to call him, Ted Bettner from the West Virginia Budget and Policy Priorities, kind of a subset or a sub-organization of the National Budget and Policy Priorities Organization, which is one of the best research organizations in the country. Anyway, and the folks in West Virginia are going to be... have been looking into this Chinese, very significant potential Chinese investment that is the subject of a letter of understanding that was signed by Trump and the, I guess, the whoever in China needs to sign these documents.
Yeah, I don't think it was actually Trump. I believe it was...
Wilbur?
John, I believe it was a West Virginia official and a... a lower ranking, not the top China official.
All right,
I believe
so it's a letter. It's a letter of understanding, which is not a contract, and so a thousand things could derail it, obviously. And nonetheless, it's big news, and we're going to get hear from Ted about more details on it. Gail and I have been sort of chatting about it here, and obviously, I think that we think the proposal is related to a huge investment in the gas reserves, especially of West Virginia, and most of which would be sent by pipeline to a port or a hub in Maryland and then shipped across the ocean. And my understanding is mostly there are also some other chemicals and processes and industries that are related that are involved. But then it's part of China's get rid of coal program. Actually, they're going to natural gas in areas where they have currently completely reliant on coal. Anyway, it's a big deal, and we're going to hear more about it. It could certainly alter the economic landscape of West Virginia, which has, been cutting its budgets for almost 6 years now. And has been, but in other words, we've seen it right here in the panhandle in a number of ways. On Shepherd University, for example, has had its budget cut for almost every year for the past five, maybe, I'm not sure this past year, but up until then, it's just been cut. Public teachers, funds for public schools, roads and infrastructure program. They passed a road bond program to help do, but that's mainly going to... maintain. It's not going to do anything new, so there's not going to be really, you're not going to see any improvement really there. We're in tough shape money wise in the state, and there aren't that many rich people. The only billionaire is our current idiotic governor. I think he's the only one.
There may be some billionaires, John, outside the state that own some of this.
There are many.
They don't want to move into dirty water. Okay,
no, they live in Connecticut or someplace, you know. So they're the investor. The investor class. Sure, they own half the rights of way in West Virginia, you know, for mining and everything else.
They're all
billionaires. But I mean, as far as in the state, you know, people who could levy a tax on inside, you know, like citizens you could tax, there's not a big billionaire class in West Virginia.
I think when
George Bush's tax cut for the rich went through back in, you know, the beginning of Bush's administration, that only 120 some West Virginia families qualified.
Is that right?
Yeah,
okay.
But you know, you take Connecticut, they had a couple of million qualified.
Okay.
I mean, so it shows you. I mean, the robbery of the resources of the state has been going on for decades. You know, Sean O'Leary, a guy who's been on the program quite a few times. I mean, his approach to the whole matter was to tax out, to develop a tax on outside owned wealth, and he claimed that could be done. Other people claim John Unger said he thought that'd be a violation of the Commerce Clause. I don't know what, who knows, but anyway, we still haven't solved the problem. We're sitting here right now, and then along comes this big Rock Candy Mountain idea. Well, we'll see what happens to that. Gail, why don't we? It's about time. I'm gonna queue up. You got anything to report on for a minute? Because I want to queue up Ted's number here so we can get ready to call him.
Let me pull something here. Have you talked yet this morning about Sessions saying that he's considering naming a special counsel to lead Department investigation into Clinton?
Yeah, why don't you cover that? No, I haven't covered that yet. Go ahead.
Okay. Let's see what else. That's the biggie that I know of. Let me check a couple of other things here. Moore, of course, but that's getting beaten to death. But I hope they find a way to get rid of this horrible person, and either before or after the election. And I think it's thankfully that the opposition to him continues to build. I'm amused at Trump's hypocrisy, saying that if Moore is guilty of the allegations, that he should step aside. Trump seems to have forgotten some of the things that he himself has done, that there's recordings of him making light of disrespect to
making light of assault. I just grab him by the pussy, you know, right? I think that's a description of assault.
You know. Oh my! And you know, I'll probably never forget when there was still more than one candidate for the GOP nomination. Him calling out in a very, very ugly and sexist manner a female candidate,
what do you mean, Hillary?
No, it was one of the GOP candidates. Do you remember that? I think he referred.
I don't know who it is. No. I don't. Huh? I already remember it, but I don't remember who the candidate was. Was that one? Oh, that's
okay,
Christy. Meg Whitman from Hewlett Packard.
Yeah. I mean, when in, you know,
he's a jackass. He's a jackass. That's all there is to it. Hey, time. It's about time for us to put in a call to Ted here.
Okay.
Hold on. We got a. Hey.
Carly Fiorina,
oh, that's who it was. Oh, okay. All right. Hey, Mike, I got to add a call on here. You want to stay on? Everybody stay on if they want to.
Okay.
Yeah, I got to hold the positions.
I got to call Ted here, and I had his number queued up, but then I answered the call from Mike, and I lost my queue. Hold on, you guys say something in a minute.
They took my stapler. They took my stapler. Yeah, we're gonna need you to move to storage room B. No, I can't. I can't move this tight.
with the Ark of the Covenant, 3, 4, 5.
We really like the work you're doing, and we'd like you to come in on Saturday, if that's okay. Yeah. And then we're going to need you to come in again on Sunday, if that's all right. Yeah. Yeah, we're going to get started about 6 in the morning.
We should be...
But we're not. Hey, Gail, how's it going?
Hello, Ted.
Good morning, Ted.
Hi, Ted. How you doing?
Good.
Hold on, Ted. This is John Case. Hold on, everybody. I got to host this program here. Hold on a second, okay? All right. So we got my.
I think John has to make a call here.
Gail, be quiet. Okay, Ted's already on the line.
Okay,
just be quiet a minute. Okay, good Lord. You know, I feel like we're this is like the senior center. You know, that's eggs being served, not pancakes. You know what? Anyway.
I want some eggs. That's not fair.
Anyway, welcome to the Winners and Losers radio program, Ted Bettner from West Virginia Budget and Policy Priorities. Is it actually called West Budget and Policy Priorities like your kind of parent friend, or is it you have a different name?
Yes, the West Virginia Center on Budget and Policy. Slightly different.
Okay, slightly. Okay, right. Well, okay, Ted, I just got to tell you, all morning we've been chewing on this China deal here and reading about it and trying to wonder, one, is it real? And two, if it is, what do we know enough to know what it is even? And then three, whatever else you want to say about it, because I did read some of your remarks on the website there, but it's obviously going to do a, if it's anything like what it says, it's going to create a huge tsunami here in West Virginia. Now, it may never touch the lives of 80% of the people, okay, but still. All right. Anyway, go ahead. Tell us what you think, man.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're absolutely right. First of all, we don't know enough. I think if anybody gets a chance to read Ken Ward's article this morning, that's how journalism should be done. You actually ask questions and get to the bottom of something. What he found out pretty instinctively is that there's no details on this. We don't know what's happening. They say they're not offering financial incentives. And if that's true, then what's the deal? Why do they need to play around with the state of West Virginia? Like, what's the state got to offer if they're not ponying up something? But I think you're right. I think it can definitely be used. I can see this session coming up that they'll be like, well, we can have this deal with China, but we can't do it unless we get forced pooling, unless we lower taxes on natural gas industry, even though the gas is here. I have a good feeling these things will be played out, that this deal could fall through if we don't, you know, do this.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I mostly fear.
Right. Unless we make sure that all the money goes to the rich. It has to. It just has to. I'm sorry.
Well, money doesn't fall up, as you know, so you got to make it. I think that's still that line from Dean Baker, which I think is pretty good to describe all the policy. I think that's what we should be pretty skeptical about, and the fact that there are no details. What's the MOU with? Who is it with? What's the state offering? Land, tax incentives, equipment, regulations, streamlining the process. What are they doing?
Yeah.
Because usually when you have a deal with somebody, like if you deal with your kid or anybody, like, hey, if you do this, I'll do that, right?
Yeah.
That's a typical deal. So what's the state doing? To say the state's not doing anything, then it's like, well, why did you need to be here in the first place?
Yeah, right.
Is the thought that it's
mostly around natural gas and natural gas headed to some port in Maryland and then shipped overseas? Is that the fundamental thing going on or no? Or do we know?
Yeah, and I think the experts on the subject that have looked at the deal, you know, still think that West Virginia is not a place where that's going to be an economically viable place to do that. Because if you go down to the Lake Charles area, which sometimes called Cancer Alley down there.
Yeah.
You know, that region is just really set up for that. So if you want to see what this looks like, go take a trip down there. That's the place to go. They have these petrochemical facilities. They have tons of them. They have huge oil refineries, gas, liquid refineries. I mean, you can go down there and take a look at it and see what it looks like. Most people I know and talk to don't think the quality of life down there is too good.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying. Nobody's envious of this. Nobody in Richmond, Virginia is like, God, if we could only have that $84 billion from the Chinese to jumpstart our economy.
Yeah.
But, you know, in West Virginia, we have such low expectations, and we're just happy to go into Mineral Colony 3.0. You know, like, oh, it's deeper. And
I like that,
you know,
Mineral Colony.
District 12.
Yeah, District 12, exactly. But you see, like, people, like, even, like, the Commerce Secretary said, we're diversifying our economy. I'm like, this is diversification to get even heavier into the fossil fuel industry.
Yeah.
I'm like, that's not diversifying. Diversifying is having tourism, having a high-tech manufacturing sector, you know, things that other places have, having a more knowledge-based economy. That's diversifying your economy. This is just digging your heels in deeper. Because the gas is here, the shale's here, the shale gas deposits were here. Nobody in West Virginia created them. Right to work didn't make them happen. Getting rid of prevailing wage did not put the shale deposits in the ground. So, I mean,
yeah,
this is just really important to understand, because nothing that they've done has created this.
But it appears that of the deals that Trump announced, or at least supposedly had people sign in China, this is the biggest one. That's what the Post is reporting. So China must
want the record on those things going through.
I don't know with China. What is the record on it? I mean, they've done most of their investments in, like, hard hit places in Africa and Asia and now in Latin America they're doing it too. I see, but it's you know, sometimes their style of investment. Right? I was reading a lengthy article by Danny Roderick on Botswana. Not too long ago, and the deal there came in, and they really engaged in no direct political interference of any kind, except they said, okay, well, we'll build the ports and the aircraft, we'll build infrastructure. Right. That will be you basically had very few capital assets to start with, and now you'll have this when we get done, you know, and then we'll haul out whatever natural resources we want, but we'll leave you with some infrastructure. They apparently thought that was a good deal in Botswana, but whether it ever materializes, that was a direct government deal with China, though. That was not through just a company of some kind, so I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, there's no doubt that the trade imbalance, it's the first thing when I saw the deal, the first thing I thought of, oh, wow, they're trying to, you know, even out the trade imbalance, which is huge, you know, to help the yen, you know, to do that. And that makes perfect sense on there. They're sitting on mounds and mounds of cash, just like U.S. corporations are. But China's really sitting on a lot of cash, and they need to get rid of it. They need to offset it and by investing in the United States. So what are they going to do? You know, so maybe a high profit margin or a really good investment. It's not really their top priority. It's there. They'd like to do that, but it's probably not the most biggest thing they want to do. And I think that's why U.S. companies haven't done something of this magnitude, because it just doesn't make economic sense. I think that's what that Bloomberg article is pointing out.
Yeah.
But for them, it might make sense if, you know, even if they lose money, you know, they can write it off. Who cares? I don't know.
Yeah. But on the other hand, if you were China, right, and you wanted to pick some place where your investment could be reasonably, why not pick a small state where your investment will swamp, you know, half the other investments around, and, you know, you won't have to worry about politics that much. These guys think that way sometimes, you know, so.
Yeah, I think, like, China, for them, I mean, they have no idea. Neither does you, me, or anybody else have any idea what's going to happen to the natural gas industry in 10, 15, or 20 years. Like, we didn't know 10 years ago what would happen today. Like, we just don't know. So to say, like, oh, they're going to be investing for 20 years, I'm like, yeah, right. I'm like, we don't know. If they can pull out, there's no reason they can't pull out,
right,
you know, and do those things. But I do think even if they don't want the policies that we talked about, there are people that are in, like, our Speaker of the House or Senate President that want those policies.
Yeah.
That's
right.
And they
yeah.
will use
and
that.
That's their deal.
That,
yeah. Yeah. Right.
You know, it doesn't matter.
That's right. No, I think there'll be. I think the Chinese will be completely agnostic about the politics, except insofar as they want it. If they make any investment, you know, they don't want to lose it. You know, so they're gonna. But I mean that. And they clearly want to make the shift from coal to natural gas where they can. So, I mean, that part of it, I mean, that's kind of one of the things they're doing, right? Is because they got a huge coal thing, and then they have, and coal mining is still low tech over there, more or less, and lots of people die doing it. You know, so it's just.
If you would have told me, like, you know, 15 years ago that the Chinese and the Russians would be like the big investors in West Virginia coal and gas, I wouldn't have believed you.
I know, it's really, it's really tough. But so, all right. So, is there a next stage in this? When does the next foot drop? I mean, do we know? Are we just waiting to hear more? Who in the state has the info to tell us? Shelley Moore Capito. She seems to be representing
us. Yeah, that's a really good question. I mean, it seems like this Commerce Secretary has the closest line. I mean, some of the projects they talked about, and the companies are already doing stuff, so they're already building like the natural gas electric power generation, you know, I believe up in near Moundsville. So, I mean, I think up in that area, I forget which exactly where it is, but they're already doing some of that, so it's already happening. The question is how augmented it's going to be.
Yeah.
I think that's the thing we're going to look for. I imagine you're just going to have to play it by ear to see what happens
right.
up there. But it's definitely going to displace some of the steam coal production in the States the more and more heavily we get involved in natural gas, but which is the real irony in all of this.
Now, is this pipeline?
The people who told us there was a war on coal are actually financially perpetuating a war on coal.
Yeah, I mean, for them, they look at it like the market's doing this, not government regulation, so it's okay, which is whatever. The government creates the market, so...
Right, but before it was...
Get all Pollyannian on them. But,
oh, God almighty.
But, I think that's where they would say the difference is, but... Yeah, but everybody knows that the gas industry has been the central factor in dropping down steam coal production. But this will definitely bring that along further. It's going to be really interesting. And it's just, I mean, the problem is with this kind of magnitude of investment, if it does happen, really would, displace a lot of other industries that could potentially be more viable in the area. Because you create an area that's not doesn't have a good quality of life. Like I said, go down to Lake Charles, go down to that area. There's engineers, there's lots of engineers who mostly run those facilities, but it's not it was at one point, but it's not somewhere that people regard as like a really high quality of life because of the pollution, because of all those issues.
Perhaps we should rename the state.
We're just taking ourselves deep.
Yeah, aren't we setting aside one part of environmental problems for another long-term environmental issues as well, aren't we?
Yeah, this is where that 3.0 comes in. Yeah, I mean, I think in the short term, natural gas is probably needed to help bridge the gap. Even in a perfect world, we need natural gas electricity production to help bridge our other energy sectors. But what we want to do is not make sure it's dominant. We want to make sure the renewables eventually become dominant and that we use that just as a backstop. That's ideally we want to go for my kids and my grandkids at some point.
Maybe we should introduce a proposal in the legislature that we should rename the state West Libya.
That would be good. That's pretty funny.
Can I throw something out here, John?
Yeah, go ahead, Gail.
This is Gail Becker. I wanted to mention an article by Ken Moore Jr. in the Charleston Gazette Mail, and as you know, he and others there have done some great reporting on this, and one of the articles that he did was stating basically that this thing is drawing more questions than answers. He said political leaders rush to take credit for this, but let me read you here. I'm trying to bring it up. He says, what kind of natural gas processing plants, pipelines, or cracker plants will China Energy Investment Corporation build? Where? How many jobs will be provided? How many of them will go to West Virginians? Is the state's environmental regulatory system up to the task of protecting residents? What about the long-term climate effects of the drive to burn more fossil fuels? Will this kind of investment in natural gas spell an even faster decline for the state's already struggling coal industry? Question after question, and I believe the West Virginia officials are basically mum right now, other than or at least on details, other than to say, "Hey, we drew up something great. Just trust us."
It's a five, John. Trust me.
Well, I know, but
yeah. Hold my beer.
Yeah, right. I know. No.
I'm thinking of trying something.
It's it's interesting. They start throwing around numbers that are bigger than the state's GDP. It's I tell everyone's going to go out and that they're going to get drunk.
Well, I just saw
a lot of intoxicated individuals.
I just saw a number, John. I just saw a number that said 83.7 billion.
Yeah,
our GDP is about 72 billion. Yeah.
I thought it was in the 80s. Thanks, Mike.
No. The state's GDP is a 70-something, 72, and deal is 80.
I was talking about the overall investment.
Oh, okay.
What they were talking about online, the story that I just read was $83.7 billion in it.
Yeah, exactly. That's what most of the news articles were saying the other day.
I think I said 87, so I was bumping it a bit. Sorry about that. Well, I don't know. Who knows what it's going to be? I mean, that's Ted's whole point.
But anyhow, the bottom line, how much are the people of West Virginia going to get out of this is I think, the major question. And
I think the other question immediately is the one Ted opened up with, now this big hunkin' banana is on the middle of everybody's table. How is that going to impact the actual budget discussions and then this upcoming legislature session in January? How's that going to influence that? And the implication is, you better keep tightening your belt or you might not get this deal kind of thing. Have you already heard some of that, Ted? Is that already hearing noises like that?
I have not heard that. I definitely think forced pooling and tax, like the business personal property tax, which we have in West Virginia, which if it went away, like the biggest beneficiaries would be the gas industry, because that's all they have is huge machinery and equipment. Mm-hmm. So they would avoid all taxes, most of all taxes, and the severance tax is paid by the producer. But the downstream stuff would all be under the personal property tax, mainly. So if you get rid of that, oh, my God.
Yeah.
Then you're not going to even get the revenue from this or the pipelines. We can go into that, too. I mean,
would this
get,
so typically this kind of a
nobody's
deal.
Nobody's envious of this kind of development.
Right. This kind of a deal would necessarily then include some agreement about, we won't ever, raise the severance tax on you or some permanent arrangement like that. Wouldn't that be? That'd have to be part
I don't know
it,
how
right?
they could ever do that politically. I think, that's what I'm saying. Like, the state has, very little say in, interstate commerce. It's really, I don't know what the state can really put on the table and deal unless it's huge. I mean, think of Wisconsin and Foxconn. That's the kind of thing I'm waiting to see. Because that's a deal. You're bringing stuff to the table, or the Amazon thing, the headquarters, too. Mm-hmm. I guess you can have two headquarters. But, that's the deal. Those are deals. That's what I kept saying to reporter, I was just I don't understand what the deal is. What are we bringing to the table? What is the public or the state of West Virginia, the government, bringing to the table? Because it's not at all clear. You're signing an MOU with the state, but I'm like, okay, well, why don't you just sign that with private companies? Why do we need to be there?
That's a good question.
You're not giving anything away.
That's a good question that we could ask our local delegation here in the Eastern Panhandle, except most of our local delegation, I think, is too stupid to understand that statement. Okay, so...
I'm sorry, what were you saying?
I was talking about, you know, like Eric Householder. I mean, you know, having a conversation with him, you know, I mean...
I was agreeing with you
in my ham-handed way. We could talk to Riley Moore about it, but hell, his aunt is running the whole thing. So I know that family. I think they're pretty tight, you know. So even though I don't mind,
I mean, Riley, the one thing, a lot of members of the Republican delegation have been, you know, in the state legislature, usually are pretty good on tax incentives and, you know, trying to be more transparent about that stuff. So pressing them, or our state auditor, who's all into being transparent and accountable with government expenditures, which is a very good thing, you know, pressing them about this, I think, is important.
Okay. Yeah.
And asking them for transparency and accountability, which I think a lot of them have shown.
All right. Then I think we'll launch an effort in that direction.
I'm optimistic on that one.
I think we'll launch an effort in that direction. Yeah, I think that's a good one to go. What is the deal?
Riley Moore, he ran on a lot of that. I don't
dislike him that much. He came to my house three times, which from an electoral standpoint and his point of view was a waste of time, you know. But nonetheless, you know, I had fun talking to him. I could have a conversation with him, whereas some of the others, I mean, I really.
I want to throw
a moose turd pie in their face.
I didn't have fun talking to him, John. I'm sorry. Okay. Not to rain on him. I know he came to your house, but
three times
to my house, and I didn't have any pleasant conversations with him at all. No.
Did you let your dragon out? Is that what happened? Did Marcus come out or
no? Marcus, he wanted to.
One of the best cures you can have for holding your stomach in case, you know, holding your nose in your stomach is to come early in the morning to our program at 6:30 called the Moose Turd Cafe, and after you eat something there, the rest of the day will be great. Okay, so
the Moose Turd Cafe, everybody. Dr. Lecter is back there cooking up something special.
That's right. Anyway, well, Chad, listen,
John's joined by his sidekick at the Moose Turd Cafe. His name is I forgot.
Mike Diesel. Yes. Okay. Anyway, so anyway, Ted, thanks so much for updating us on this. Do you have anything else you want to add about? You should make sure to give your address and contact information for folks that are listening that hear about this. And
yeah, if anybody our website is wvpolicy.org. You can always call us at 304-720-8682. We'll be paying attention to this deal. We're going to be a big push to abolish or drastically reduce the income tax and get rid of the business personal property tax this session, along with work requirements for Medicaid. So we're talking about taking health care away from 30,000 to 50,000 West Virginians. That should be on everybody's top agenda to fight against that. So there'll be big issues this session, and the more people involved, the more we can do.
All right, buddy.
Thank you so much. And Ted, one more thing I just wanted to mention before we leave. Winning. So much winning. Okay.
All right, Ted. Thanks so much, man.
Down the night out.
Thank you so much, all right. Ted.
All right. Take care, buddy.
Take care, guys.
Bye-bye. All right. Well, hey, guys. That was a pretty good interview, huh?
It was a very good interview.
Wow. He favors us with sharing his thoughts, and then he has to deal with stories about holding your nose on an earlier show. Yeah.
I know, but that's okay. We like Ted. He's good.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah.
He's always been a good and of course that organization, I think, is the head of it is. She's also been on the program. I don't remember her name right now, but she's great, too. She used to run the West Virginia healthcare program. But
okay.
Regina.
Oh, yeah, you've had her in studio.
Yeah, we've had her. Yeah, she's been around.
Like the
yeah, I think she's the chair of that organization now. And our good friend locally, actually, Garrett Moran, I don't know what you guys know. He was one of my Quaker friends. And he used to be in charge of West Virginia's mental health program. Okay. And now he works for a private outfit down in Washington. But he also has a really good, real strong interest with the you know, the healthcare side of all the budgeting problems. And I see that Ted has mentioned, Ted Bettner, that they're going to try to introduce a work requirement for the Medicaid program now to throw people off. You know, it's just.
Yeah. Right. Because, I mean, you know, you have handicapped both elderly people and children that will suffer and potentially die because of these cuts.
That doesn't bother them.
Absolutely, Mike. Absolutely.
And that's a really frightening prospect, and I just don't understand it. They make up for being ignorant by being mean.
Oh, yeah. You don't deserve health care if you can't afford it.
Yes. How dare you?
Yeah, right.
How dare you want to exist?
All right, guys. Well, I think we should conclude this this podcast at this point, okay? I really do, because we don't have another guest coming on, and I don't want to take away from it. It's being the focus of what we post, okay? Because I think it'll attract some attention.
Well, so. I'm certain everybody's had their fill of me. Thank you, Gail, for allowing me to step in.
Thank you so much, Mike, for sharing and calling in, okay? And I'll probably disappear too and listen to the.
I'm just going to put on music. I mean, this business of having the show go on an hour and a half when we actually only have one guest. I mean, I think it hurts the podcast. Okay, to do that. So
more. I thought it was very impactful, guys. Thanks, John. I'll talk to you tomorrow. Gail, take it easy, buddy.
All right, buddy. Gail, talk.
Thank you, Mike.
Bye.
All right, thank you, John. Have a good rest of the show, and I'll listen to it here.
Okay, buddy. Thanks, man. Bye-bye.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye. All right, folks, that's the winners and losers interview today, and let me get this the tape stopped. Let's see. Winners and Losers Radio Program, November 14th, 2017.